Everybody goes through tough breakups. It's inevitable and a necessary part of growing up. This is something my father always told me, as he offered consolation during my many heartbreaks in my adolescence. But remember, each heartbreak will draw you closer to the one, he'd say, emphasizing the last two words. I lived by these words, finding optimism in heartache and keeping my head high despite emotional despair. Eventually, after years of viewing broken relationships through rose-colored glasses, I met Stacy. For a few years in my 20s, I truly believed Stacy was the one. We met in college, dated for years, and fell in love. She checked all of the boxes. She was sweet, smart, kind, and most importantly, she loved me. But ultimately, it ended. Though not like any of my previous relationships. Everything began to unravel 5 weeks ago. Emotionally, Stacy and I had been navigating rough waters. We both felt that the other had changed into an unrecognizable shell of their former self. We couldn't communicate, and our relationship deteriorated. I decided to call it. "We aren't working out," I said to her one Saturday afternoon while sitting in a booth at our local diner. Her eyes stared down at the table, glassy with tears. "I think we should end things now, while we're still on civil terms, rather than postpone it and hate each other." She continued to stare down for a few minutes. The tension in the booth grew. She finally looked up. "3 years, Johnny?" she said in a whisper. "I've given you 3 years for this." She gestures at the restaurant around us. "To end it in a fucking diner?" "I'm sorry," I said. "I don't know what else to say." I got out of the booth and dropped a $20 bill on the table. Still looking down, she whispered, "You will be." "What?" I asked sharply. "What the fuck is that supposed to mean?" She looked up, gave me a weak smile, gathered her things, and headed for the door. "It's nothing," she said. "I'll just need some time." But as is always the case, things didn't break smoothly. For the next few weeks, Stacy made unexpected appearances throughout my daily routines. During a stop at the supermarket, I spotted her familiar face 3 aisles away, staring at me through dark sunglasses. Eating dinner with my coworkers, I noticed her sitting at the bar, glancing over to my table every few seconds. Every night, I'd spot her old Ford car parked across the street. I hoped her interest in me would flicker away, but when the stalking intensified, I decided to stop it. A cold morning a week later, I entered my coffee shop for my daily routine. The barista greeted me cheerfully. "Good morning, Johnny," she waved, grinning wildly. "Here you go, the usual." She handed me my personalized Americano drink. I stared blankly, since I hadn't ordered. "Courtesy of Miss Stacy," she beamed. "I have to say, you two make such a cute couple." Her pitch rose in delight. She nodded her head towards the back of the shop where Stacy sat, grinning. She shot me a quick wave. "Listen, Monica," I began. "I'm not sure if you've heard, but Stacy and I are engaged." A voice finished for me, behind me. Stacy wiggled her hand to Monica. A diamond ring glittered on her finger. "Oh my God," screamed the barista. Stacy joined with a high-pitched yelp. "Why didn't you tell me? Congratulations to you guys. I've always thought of you two." I cut her off, grabbed Stacy's arm, and dragged Stacy out the door. "What the fuck, Stacy?" I scolded. "What the fuck are you doing? I know you didn't want to break up, but this? This? What the fuck?" Stacy began to weep loudly. Eyes glared at me suspiciously. "Stop," I whispered sharply. "Stop." Like a switch, her crying stopped. "See?" she said, smiling in a calm and soothing voice. "See what I can do? Everyone will always believe the girl." I stared blankly, disbelieving. "Let me put it in simple terms," she began in the same eerie voice. "You are not breaking up with me. Got it? If you do, let's say there will be a lot of trouble for you." She winked. "You're fucking crazy," I said in a hoarse voice. "Maybe," she shrugged indifferently. "But you're stuck with me, so don't suggest being apart again. Got it?" She planted a kiss on my unmoving cheek and strolled down the street. "See you, babe," she winked at me over her shoulder. That night, I sent Stacy a series of harsh texts, demanding she leaves alone. I told her we were over. I told her I didn't want to see her. And I ended with a threat. If she didn't stop her stalking, I would file a restraining order. I didn't see Stacy for a week and a half. Yesterday evening, I arrived at my apartment and noticed my door was slightly ajar. Adrenaline pumping, I pulled my phone and dialed the police. I poked my head inside. "Hello?" I yelled. "Is anyone here? If you are, identify yourself or I will call the police." No response came. "This is your last warning," I screamed, trying to sound brave. "I will call the police." In the distance, I heard a voice. It sounded familiar. It sounded like Alex Trebek. I locked my phone and entered my apartment. The bright television screen broke the living room's darkness. "What phenomenon occurs?" Alex began. "Often referred to as the Northern Lights." On the couch, Stacy sat with a bowl of popcorn on her lap. "Aurora Borealis," she chirped through a full mouth. I stood at the entrance to my living room, staring, immobilized with fear. My keys dropped, causing a loud clang. Stacy's head turned. "Hey, babe, glad you're home." I know, she began apologetically. "I know you always want me to wait for you to watch our Jeopardy reruns, but I couldn't wait. Come join me." I continued to stand and stare. A mix of horror and anger filled me. "Stacy," I whispered, "how did you get in here?" "Oh, I've had copies of your keys for years," she said joyously. "I just never used them until today. I got copies of your car keys, work keys, and a pair that I believe opens your parents' house. I thought you knew." I lost it. Filled with fury, I screamed at her louder and harsher than I have ever screamed at anyone in my life. I told her I hated her. I didn't want her anywhere near me. I told her I would be filing a restraining order. And I pulled out my phone to call the police. I charged her with breaking. "Now get the fuck out before they arrest you," I ended softly, panting in anger. She clicked the TV off. She turned to face me. "Call them," she said calmly. "I told you, they always believe the girl," she smiled. I began threatening her again, but she interrupted me and got up calmly. "Look," she began, "I get it. I do. You've made yourself very clear. I didn't want it to come to this, but you didn't give me any choice." She picked up her purse, rustled its contents, and pulled something out. In her hand was a small pistol. She raised it slowly. "I told you, they always believe the girl," she began. "Stacy, wait! I'm allowed! Wait, we can talk about..." But the bang cut me off. I fell to the ground, hands over my head, lying fetal, but the pain never came, only a soft ringing in my ears. I opened my eyes and lying in front of me was Stacy. Where her left eye used to be was a bullet-sized gaping hole, a mixture of blood, pus, and brains ooze pus in the hole. I stared in, panting loudly, noticing her brain twitch softly for the last time. Blood dripped from her nose. Her left hand index finger flickered slightly as her life left her. The police arrived after my neighbor reported the gunshot. I was brought into the station, where I detailed everything that had transpired the weeks before. However, everything went out the window when a detective came into the room, reporting the contents of Stacy's letter. Before leaving my apartment, Stacy left a handwritten note in her bedroom. It accused me of beating her, abusing her, and threatening to keep quiet about everything. She wrote that she was terrified that I would kill her in my rage, and she mentioned I kept firearms in my apartment. She ended her note by stating that if anyone found her note, it was probably too late. I had killed her already. I was placed under arrest and in a holding cell for the night. I am writing this hoping that someone believes me and sees what actually happened. But I'm afraid Stacy was right. They'll always believe the girl. I'm writing this story because no one talks about it. No one talks about the incident that occurred 7 years ago. The incident that ruined my life. That ruined me forever. I never knew that a simple mistake could cost you so much and could scar the very depths of your existence. No one blamed me for what happened, but I could never shake off the guilt. It was somewhat my fault. If only I had realized it sooner, I could have stopped it from happening. I still remember the painful cries of my mother. It happened 6 years ago, when I was 10 years old. I lived in a small town with my family. It was just me, my parents, and my little sister Helen, who was 6 years old. Since we lived in a small town, almost everyone knew each other somehow and were connected. Helen and I were enrolled in the same school. It was the best school in the area, and most of the kids were enrolled there. I would often see my little sister during break times or on the large ground. Our school wasn't top class or anything, but it was great in its way. The principal held all the necessary events. They would take us on short trips. We had sports festival students, etc. This was an exciting week for us since the students' week was starting soon. Every day after classes ended, we would sit and discuss what our class would be doing for the students' week. Every class has its discussion session before heading home. When I was done with my discussion, I grabbed my bag and headed out. I saw Helen near the school gates. She seemed to be talking to someone. I couldn't see where I was, so I started walking a bit faster. I was almost to the gate when I saw a tall man dressed as a clown. He was hidden well enough for you not to see him until you got really close. Helen, what are you doing? I asked her in a lower voice than normal. Oh, big brother, look, I met Mr. Clown, and he says that he will be my friend, she replied excitedly. I looked at my sister with a sad expression. She never got to make friends. Everyone in her class avoided her because she looked slightly different from normal kids. Just because there was a large birthmark across her face, the kids discriminated, and she was often the target of bullies. But she never let that bother her. She was kind and sweet and tried her best to fit in. I looked toward the clown to thank him for saying that to her and meant a lot. But as soon as I looked at his face, I couldn't say anything. His gaze shifted from me, then to Helen, and then to me, mentioning a creepy grin on his face. It wasn't the type of smile you wear when you're happy. He was smiling, but his eyes were dead and cold. I slowly shifted uncomfortably under his gaze. I grabbed Helen's hand. "Come on, we're going home. Mom and Dad are waiting," I said, keeping my eyes on the clown. She happily nodded and waved the clown by. I could feel his eyes on us as we walked away, but I dared not look back until we took a turn into the next street. I turned around to make sure he wasn't following us. For once, I was thankful our house was nearby. I couldn't wait to be behind the safe and secure walls of my house. I don't know, but that guy just gave me a bad feeling and my guts told me to stay away from him. I dropped my bag and I let it plop on the floor. Like always, my mom greeted us and asked us about school. As expected, Helen mentioned her clown friend. Mom looked at me with a questioning gaze, and I told her the story and about what I thought about the clown. My parents only chuckled. They both knew very well that I was scared of clowns. That night, I woke up just as usual. I went to the bathroom in the kitchen to drink some water. And just like every other day, I checked up on my little sister before heading back to my room. Our rooms were on the second floor. I opened her door, walked in, I looked around, and just when I was leaving, something caught my attention. I looked out of her bedroom window and saw the same clown standing in the middle of the road, illuminated by the streetlight. I stumbled back in shock and fell to the ground. I was breathing heavily and I slowly got up to look out of the window, but the clown was now gone. I didn't mention this incident to my parents or anyone else since I wasn't sure if I didn't imagine things. A few days passed and I didn't see that clown. That I was thankful for. It was finally Students' Week. The school was filled with different stalls, some for food, some for games, and some for other entertainment. Our class had a game stall, and we offered different prizes to the winner. As the day went by, we closed our stall and went to see the other stalls. I realized the school was packed with people and it was hard to move around. My friends and I were heading to a food stall that was said to be great. As I was slowly moving between the crowd, I saw Helen from the corner of my eyes. I raised my hand to call her, but before I could call out her name, I saw that red curly hair. My face turned white. It was the same clown from a few days ago. He was talking to Helen and was leading her somewhere. My guts told me to stop her right away. I desperately started pushing through the crowd. I needed to stop her. I moved through the crowd. One of my friends asked me if everything was okay, and I explained to him the situation. At first, he thought I was kidding, but then he realized I wasn't. We were searching and I saw my little sister near the front gate. She was innocently smiling at the clown and my heart broke. In a few moments, I was running toward the gate as fast as I could. I looked around, but they were nowhere to be seen. I immediately started to run back home. I had to tell them about what had happened. They called the police and reported the incident. The police told us to wait as they sent out a search team. Later that day, the phone began to ring. It was my mom's friend, Carol. She told her that she saw Helen with some clown. She tried calling out to Helen, but they were gone before she could. They seemed to be headed to the forest. My mother dropped to the ground, and my father quickly called the police. Later, they called us and told us that they had found my little sister's body. The body was in such a bad shape that they could barely recognize her. I won't go into further detail because it is too hard for me to bring back the memory of her broken little body. To think that innocent smiling face would be the last I would see of my sister.
Hi, this is Leonardo. I'm 35 now. I'll tell you a terrible story that happened to my wife, Patricia, 7 years back. All this happened to her when I wasn't even in her life. When I came into her life, she told me all these things. I was also very surprised after knowing her real horror story. So the story starts. Patricia was a tall, talented, attractive, and beautiful girl. She'd also been part of a beauty pageant at the time. There would hardly be any man in her area who doesn't love or like her. She lived with her dear mother. They both were delighted, but soon everything was about to change. So, one day, she went for a morning walk.
Mom, I'm going, okay?
Okay, honey. Honey, take your glasses too. You've just had an eye operation. Take care. And she left home. She enjoys walking in the park, but after a while, she realized that someone is following her for a long time.
Who's there? Who's there?
No one responded. She didn't see anything, but heard only the sound of someone's footsteps. She got scared a little. She thought that maybe that would be her illusion, so she didn't pay much attention to it. So, after that day, when she'd left for the market, she felt that someone was following her throughout the way. She looked back and saw no one there. She was very scared after that incident. And when she came back from the market, she still felt that someone was following her. She was very upset, but she didn't tell her mum anything because she didn't want her mother to be more upset because of her. And time passed like that. A few days later, an important meeting was about to take place in her office, and at the same time, the tire of her car was punctured, and she was suspecting that the disgusting work must be done by the same man or stalker. And even without wanting to travel, she had to travel by bus on the day for her meeting. While traveling by bus, she saw the real face of the stalker. He was also there. She got utterly scared witnessing the man's face because he didn't look like an ordinary man. His age was about 30 years, maybe. His teeth were yellow and his eyes were completely red. He was wearing torn old clothes that had lots and lots of holes in them. On looking closely, she realized that his clothes were also covered with bloodstains. Seeing that, her condition deteriorated completely. But the man was constantly staring at her, not even blinking at all. It seemed that he was doing that for some purpose.
Oh my God! Who's he? Is he going to kill me?
The stalker slowly started moving toward her. Fortunately, the bus stopped at the station at the correct time, and she quickly got off the bus, took a sigh of relief. When she looked back to see him, she saw that he was still looking at her, which was creepy and abnormal. He was also smiling, and he was saying, "Bye, bye, Georgia. Come back soon to meet me." The man's mental condition wasn't looking right, so she ignored him again. She couldn't understand whose name he was talking about. She had a cousin named Alex. He'd come to stay in her house for a few days. Patricia had told him everything. He said he would help her if something happened again. So, the next day, she got her car fixed, and the same day was her office holiday. She was sitting by her window and doing her work. She saw a little boy approaching her car and blowing the air out of her car. Then Alex reached to him and talked to him, smilingly. She was shocked. She was sure that it was all done by Alex. But why? It may be a trap for Patricia. Things got even worse when she saw the stalker in front of her house.
Mom, come here. He's there. Whoo! I can't see anyone.
Then Alex came over there. The man ran away. Patricia told her mom everything.
Now I think he will kill me. We have to call the police right now.
You should have told me all this earlier.
Why didn't you tell me? Hurry, call the police.
Alex?
Police inquired about him, but couldn't find him for many days. There was no proof against him. She'd taken several days off from the office and didn't go out also, but one day her mum felt very keen to eat ice cream. And she reached the market with Alex and her mum to get some ice cream. They knew that the stalker could come from anywhere. That's why they were also alert, and they planned that they would return home soon. So, when Patricia entered an ice cream shop to get ice cream, all of a sudden the stalker came after her. Alex punched him hard, but the stalker became successful in running away from there. He followed him and caught the stalker on the road. He held the stalker's throat tightly and punched him in the face, then kicked him in the stomach. "I will not leave you today. You annoy her a lot. Tell me, who sent you? Tell me!" He started crying. Don't know why. "Georgia."
It's me. Oh, please.
Stay away, you idiot. Why are you doing this to me, huh?
We should hand him over to the police.
On hearing the police name, the stalker got scared terribly. He was acting weird. Finally, he was caught by the police. When he got caught by the police, the whole truth came out.
Why are you doing this? Why are you following Patricia for so many days? What do you want?
I had a sister named Georgia. I loved her a lot. One day, when both of us were going on vacation in our car, where we had a vast accident, I lost her. Patricia had an eye operation 1 year ago, and her eyes are my sister's eyes. Patricia had a cornea transplant at the time. I can't bring her back in my life, but I go to see Patricia again and again as my sister. Sister.
Later, the police told the whole truth to Patricia. Knowing the truth, Patricia and her mother were quite surprised. After all, the eye she had was his sister's eye. For so long, it seemed to Patricia that the man wanted to kill her, but that was nothing like it. It hurt her how wrong she was thinking about him.
We have tried to find out his complete background. It's been found that he is a victim of depression. His mother had died in his childhood, and there was only one reason for happiness in his life, and that was his sister, and she too had gone away from him. And when he came to know that his sister's eye was transplanted in yours, that's why he wanted to meet you.
Patricia was sad about it.
My name is Easton Miles, and I live in Pasadena, California. My wife Camille and I spent many hours on a secluded beach about 45 miles from our home. We traveled there whenever we could. We had found our own little quaint wooden beach overlooking some beautiful rock pools with an open stretch of beach that extended for miles both ways. We talked for hours and found it invigorating spending time away from the bustle of city life. One Saturday, on the 2nd of July, 2016, about 1 p.m., Camille went for a walk to spend some peaceful, alone time on the beach. She was normally gone for about an hour, but on this day, she never returned. I was frantic with worry, not knowing what happened to her. I called the police. A woman by the name of Leah said she had passed a woman that fitted Camille's description, heading in the opposite direction, about a mile away, at about 1:30 p.m. Leah said they had smiled at each other as they walked by. The police combed the beach and surrounding areas in teams for 2 weeks. But Camille was never found. I never left home for 2 months after that. I couldn't come to terms with it. When the love of your life is missing, there is no closure. Even though deep down, I had an undeniable feeling that she was dead. One warm Friday, I decided to revisit our special place. Maybe I'll see her, I thought as I approached our wooden bench. As I was about to sit down, I felt like someone was watching me. I wasn't wrong. I turned around, and Leah was standing about 10 yards away, leaning against a rock. "Leah?" I said, feeling startled.
"Hi, Easton,"
she replied.
"It's so sad about your wife. How long has it been? 2 months now?"
she added, a look of empathy on her pretty face. "Yeah," I said, wondering what she was doing here. "About right."
"You must be lonely and heartbroken,"
she said as she approached me.
"Do you mind if I join you? I mean, I don't want to intrude,"
she added in a gentle voice. The truth was that I wanted time alone, but maybe I needed her gentle presence. Leah was in her late 20s, very beautiful, with soft, serene eyes and long, flowing brown hair. "Sure," I answered. "I'd like to just sit quietly, though, if you don't mind."
"I understand completely, Easton,"
she said as she sat next to me. We'd sat there without exchanging a word for about 10 minutes when I felt her place her hand on mine and turn to look at me. "Leah, I don't think this is appropriate," I said as I stood up, shocked and slightly angered.
"Oh, Easton, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to offend you,
she said, looking sad.
I thought you may appreciate the comforting touch. Please accept my apologies,
she pleaded. I felt bad. After all, I was going through a rough time, and she was just being kind. No, Leah. I'm sorry, I said. I guess I'm still very sensitive. What you did was very thoughtful.
Really?
She asked, looking for assurance. Yes, really, Leah, I answered with a gentle smile. Thank you for your support. We left shortly after that, but when I arrived at my car, I noticed her metallic blue Toyota Yaris parked about 20 yards behind mine. Coincidence? Probably. We both left, but as I was nearing the off-ramp to my home, I spotted her car three cars behind me. I felt uneasy, but maybe she lived near me. I visited Camille in my favorite spot on two occasions shortly after that, and it was becoming freaky, as on both occasions, Leah arrived a short while after I did. On the first of these two visits, Leah had a picnic basket in her hand. She sat next to me quietly and unwrapped a sandwich, handing it to me. It was shredded beef, onion, and baby gherkin with hot English mustard. It was my favorite and something Camille had always made for me. How did you know? I asked.
You look like a beef and mustard man,
she said, smiling. I hadn't eaten properly in months and finished off another two sandwiches. On this occasion, she held my hand and put her head on my shoulder. I was uncomfortable, but I didn't want to offend her kind gesture. A week later, I visited the old wooden bench again. This time, when I arrived, I didn't see Leah's car, but she was lying on the bench, the wind lifting her braided white skirt, revealing way more than I should have been seeing. She appeared to be asleep. I gently called her name, moving away from the view. She stretched out and sat up.
Oh, Easton,
she said, acting surprised.
I must have fallen asleep.
Hi, Leah, I said. She was looking at me with seductive eyes.
Do you ever?
She trailed off. Do I ever what? I asked.
You know, do you ever miss it?
She asked, her eyes drawing me in. You mean sex, Leah? I asked matter-of-factly. The truth was, I was becoming aroused, but I couldn't allow this.
Oh, Easton, do me here. Do me now.
She said, breathing heavily. Feeling vulnerable, the temptation to do the wrong thing was strong, but I stormed off.
This is going too far, Leah.
I shouted as I left.
Stay away from me.
All I could hear was,
I'm so sorry, Easton. Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought you may find it comforting. Please forgive me.
Comforting? This was getting too close for comfort. Reaching my car hurriedly, I drove off without looking back, thinking it was the last time I would ever see Leah again. I was wrong. Arriving home from work the following day, Leah's Toyota Yaris was parked outside. What the hell is she doing here? I thought. How does she know where I live? To top it all, she was nowhere to be seen. The porch light went on and the front door opened. Leah was standing in the doorway. I quickly approached her.
I thought I'd surprise you, Easton.
She said with a giggle that was unbefitting. How the hell did you get into my house, Leah? I demanded angrily.
Please don't anger me, Easton.
She said, trying to look cute. Where did you get the keys to my house from? I shouted aggressively.
You know what your problem is, Easton?
She started with her back to me. I saw the gun in her hand as she turned to face me.
You don't appreciate me.
Her tone had changed.
Sit down,
she said firmly, pushing me onto the couch. The gun was pointed directly at me, and I was afraid.
You don't remember me, do you?
She asked.
Leah Williams, quiet. Little Leah Williams, the school librarian, the nerd.
Suddenly, I recalled who she was.
I watched you every day. We were made for each other. But then you choose Camellia? Now we can be together, Easton. Finally, I get the love of my life.
Leah, what happened to Camilla? I asked, the picture emerging.
Promise you'll love me forever, Easton. And I'll put the gun away,
she said, tears now welling up in her eyes. Camilla, I started, and then I saw Camilla's keys hooked onto Leah's belt. She said in a sick, distorted way,
"I buried her next to a palm tree in a grove. I made it quick for her. You don't have to worry about her anymore, Easton. It's time for us now."
"Oh, God, no!" I heard myself cry out from my gut. As she lowered the gun, I saw my opportunity, but a fraction away from her, a shot deafened me. She had shot herself up through the mouth, and there was blood everywhere. I don't remember calling the police, but they arrived. Camilla's body was found 2 days later in a bad state of decay. My mental health suffered intensely, and I couldn't talk for 3 months. I have been going for trauma counseling for more than a year now. I don't think my life will ever return to normal again.
My name's Emmett Tanner, and I'm now 43 years old. I joined the U.S. Marines at a young age and excelled in self-defense as a sniper. Due to my skills, I was chosen to be part of an elite, top-secret group for the security of various members of the state under then-President George H.W. Bush from January 1990 to November 1992. I received the rank of second lieutenant. My job mainly involves surveillance from buildings with a rifle, using high-tech sights and a pair of telescopic binoculars. During my service, I'd had to take two people out who both attempted to assassinate two high-ranking officials. I enjoyed that job. It gave me a great thrill knowing that I had the lives of many in my hands, and my observation and sighting skills became second nature to me. I served for another 9 years after that until 2001. What I didn't realize at the time was that my skills would become an obsession. Today is the 30th of April 2007, and I'm in jail for life. So to me, it's just another day. During my stint in the Marines, I was stationed in Houston. Our sleeping quarters consisted of two 10-story buildings directly opposite one another, one for males and the other building quarters for female officers. I was on the 10th floor, in a room of my own on a corner of the building facing the women's dwelling. My night vision binoculars were so powerful that I could see a dime on the pavement 10 floors below. But I wasn't interested in looking at dimes. There were four women officers whom I found extremely enticing, and in a monochrome green night after night, I watched them undress and watch TV in skimpy nighties. One stood out from the rest. Captain Harlow Delaney was the sexiest of them all. On hot summer nights, she would sit in only her underwear and brush her beautiful long auburn hair, and she always came out of her shower into her living room completely naked, with a towel wrapped around her head. She never bothered to draw her curtains as nobody could see anything from our building, 150 yards away, except someone spying on her with a pair of binoculars. Someone like me. I didn't realize just how sick I was then, and never considered myself a stalker, but this went on for 2 years. After so much time spent taking in her beauty, I wanted to have sex with Captain Delaney. One day, while everyone was going about their duties at our base camp about 2 miles away, I climbed the stairs in the woman's dorm, red roses in hand, and within seconds, had Miss Delaney's apartment door open. I inhaled her scent as I sprinkled rose petals all over her bed and trailed them to her door. I found some lipstick and wrote on her bathroom window, "You're just so hot, Captain Harlow Delaney." Then I took out a notepad and wrote her a letter. "I watch you every night, and you really turn me on. I know you want me. You just don't know how much you want me yet." I placed it on her coffee table. She had left her cell phone in her room, and so I took down her number. That evening, I waited with bated breath for her to come home. She arrived at around 6 p.m., and I could see the shock on her face when she came into vision. No night sights needed. As I looked through the binoculars, she appeared to be staring straight at me. "Shit!" I cursed as I crouched down. Had she seen me? I thought as my heart raced. She couldn't have, I convinced myself. I had voice pitch lowering software on my cell. I activated it and then called her. "Captain Delaney," she answered, sounding shaken. "I hope you like your surprise, Lieutenant," I said, my two tone octaves lower. "Who the hell are you?" she shouted back. "A secret admirer, baby. Don't be angry. By the way, your scent fills your place, and it drives me wild," I responded. "Whoever you are, you're toast, you freak. I'm calling security," she said angrily and firmly. Ah, gee, why do you want to do that, I asked. Aren't you just touched that you have someone who can't resist you? She quickly cut me off. I took another peek through the binoculars, and within 2 minutes, two male Marines and a fellow female officer had entered her apartment. Suddenly, someone knocked on my door. Who the hell can that be? I questioned. I hastily packed away my binoculars, expecting the worst. Hey, Emmett, buddy, came the voice with a friendly smile as I opened the door. It was Arlo from down the hall. Hey, Arlo, what's up, bud? I asked casually. I could see he wanted to come in, but I stood holding the door. Just wanted to return your book, Emmett, he said, passing me my book called Criminals and Justice. Some badass people in there, he said. Particularly the stalkers, he added. Thank goodness they're all caught. They always get caught. Bastards, he said as he turned to leave. Yeah, bastards, I added. See you around, bud. Sometimes you feel like you've been hit with a sledgehammer, and this was one of those times. The next morning before roll call at 8 a.m., I waited to one side until I spotted Captain Delaney. She was walking alone, so I approached her and saluted her. Morning, Captain, I said smartly. Morning, Lieutenant, she said with a smile, but she looked troubled. What can I do for you, Emmett? She asked. I just wanted to say hi, Captain. You're looking very smart today, I quipped. Thank you, Emmett, she said, looking towards the ground. Is something wrong, ma'am? I asked. Some madman went into my room yesterday and spread rose petals all over the place. The intruder also wrote some sick, perverted letter and smeared some filth on my bathroom mirror with lipstick. That's dreadful, ma'am. Some real sickos on the prowl, I said, acting concerned. If there's anything I can do, I started. Thank you, Emmett, she answered, but I have some people on the case. Captain Delaney had referred to me as a madman and a pervert. I didn't take kindly to that at all. I smiled, saluted her, and lined up for roll call. As the day drew to a close, I waited behind a wall near the entrance to the ladies' apartment building and came out into the open as Captain Delaney arrived. It was already 7:15 p.m., and she was startled at seeing me. Emmett, what are you doing here? She asked. Just making sure you get home safely, Captain, and that you don't have a repeat of yesterday, I responded in a concerned tone. That's very kind of you, Emmett, but I've already told you I have people on the case, she said rather firmly. I was offended. A madman? A pervert? And now rejection of my offer to help? I went upstairs to my room and locked the door. I was about to teach Captain Harlow Delaney a lesson. I removed my sniper rifle from its case and assembled it together with its night sight and silencer. I very quickly had her in my crosshairs, but then she moved out of sight. Then I saw Major Ann Taylor appear. They were close friends. They began chatting as I was becoming impatient. I had an opportunity as my crosshair centered on Captain Delaney's forehead. Squeeze. I pulled the trigger. Simultaneously, Captain Delaney moved, and the bullet struck Major Taylor in her chest, killing her instantly. I think everyone in the area heard Captain Delaney scream. Damn, I said under my breath. Shit! Forensic experts quickly traced the trajectory of the bullet to my room. By the next morning, after checking that my rifle had been fired only 10 hours earlier, I was arrested and sentenced to life imprisonment. I miss those exciting days. Perhaps I'll be out soon for good behavior. My name is Hector Abbott, and I live on the second floor of an old apartment block in Green Street, Soho in downtown New York. I retired 2 years ago, and I'm now 62. I was a paratrooper in the military and keep myself fit by working out every day. I'm what one might classify as an ardent observer. I sit on my balcony, and it's like watching TV. In fact, I don't own a TV. The daily activities on Green Street keep me entertained. The other day, while purchasing some fresh bread rolls from Allison's Bakery, a block away on the opposite side of Green Street, I met the lovely young lady who owns and runs the small bakery carrying her name. The scent of freshly baked items wafted through the shop. I had seen her place, but had never gone inside. I don't miss much, and noticed a guy of around 30 doing window shopping outside the bakery, except there wasn't much in the window area but a small price list. He had blonde hair combed to one side, and a pair of faded blue jeans and a black leather jacket on. Beautiful little business you have here, I remarked, keeping an eye on the tall, slender guy at the window. Why, thank you, sir. Are you from around here? Allison asked. Yeah, the name's Hector Abbott, and I live in an apartment a block away, I responded, noticing the guy outside was staring at Allison. He quickly looked away when I turned to face him. Well, because you're a new customer, you can have the bread rolls on the house, Mr. Abbott, Allison offered kindly with a friendly and warm smile. That's very kind of you, Allison. I'll be sure to buy all my baked goodies from you from now on, I responded cheerfully. Oh, wonderful. Thank you, sir, she added all bright-eyed. I gave her a warm smile, but as I turned to leave, I noticed that guy who had been outside was now on the side of the street that I lived on, but still opposite the bakery. I crossed the road at an angle to walk back to my apartment, but kept a close vigil on him out of the corner of my eye. As I arrived at my apartment block, I saw him head back towards Allison's bakery. I had a gut feeling that something was amiss with this guy, so I began walking back towards him. As he saw me, he turned, pulled the hood of his black jacket over his head, and walked away swiftly. I stood there for 10 minutes to make sure that he never came back. Allison was kind and a friendly young lady, and I cared about her safety. The next morning, I rose at my normal time of 4:30 a.m., made a cup of coffee, and, lighting a smoke, went to sit on my balcony. At about 5:30 a.m., I saw the same guy dressed the same about 2 blocks away on the bakery side of the road. Leaning against a wall with one leg propped up against it, he lit one cigarette after another, the whole while gazing around suspiciously. I knew he was waiting for Allison. I don't know how, but I just knew it. At around 6:30 a.m., I saw Allison in the distance, climbing off a bus and heading to her shop. The guy stood up straight and took out a book, pretending to read it. As Allison neared him, he lowered the book and remarked, "Beautiful morning for a beautiful lady." Being polite, Allison responded with dignity, "Thanks for the compliment, and what's your name?" "You can call me Frank, Allison," he said. "Mind if I walk you to the bakery?" "Well, she felt awkward as he was a stranger. "Can't be careful enough in this part of town. There's some real wackos around." "Well, okay then," she replied so as not to offend him. As they walked, she felt uneasy as Frank kept eyeing her all over. When they reached the bakery, she said politely, "Thank you, Frank. You have a good day now." "Oh, I will, Allison. It started off well just walking next to you," he replied with a smirk before walking away. I put on some decent clothes and headed for Allison's bakery. As I did so, I thought I saw the guy suddenly sneak into the alley about 30 yards away. "Is that guy harassing you, Allison?" I asked, entering the shop. "He wanted to walk me to the bakery. He said there's a lot of wackos around. I thought it was harmless enough, but he kept on staring at me." "I'll keep an eye on him for you. I don't trust him," I replied. "He made me feel very uneasy, Mr. Abbott. Said his name was Frank." "Don't fret, Allison. I got you covered," I said as I turned to leave. "Thank you, Mr. Abbott. I would appreciate it," she smiled. Sitting on my balcony close to Allison's 5 p.m. closing time, I noticed Frank crossing the road with his jacket hood on, but he headed towards the same alley I had seen him move into earlier. After locking up, as Allison moved to pass the alley, Frank stepped out, startling her. "You gave me a fright, Frank," she said as her palms became sweaty. "Ah, Allison, sorry about that, but remember, I'm not one of the wackos around here," he said with wide eyes and a snicker. "I'll walk you to your bus ride," he added. This was becoming too much. "I really don't need escorting, Frank, and I'd appreciate it if you left me the hell alone," she retorted angrily. "She doesn't recognize me or remember me," he thought as he walked away. I quickly moved downstairs. After Allison had walked about 100 yards, Frank began following her. I kept my distance and followed without being seen. As Allison's bus departed, she noticed Frank standing with his arms folded. He quickly pointed at her with a sick smile on his face, and then gestured with the peace sign. I approached him openly, but when he saw me, he rapidly made his way through the heavy traffic, and I lost him. At least Allison was on her way home safely. Frank continued his antics for another 4 days. I just couldn't pin him down, and Allison was a nervous wreck. We reported his activity to the police. I never oversleep, but the next morning I woke up with a startle. It was 7:30 a.m. I quickly moved to my balcony viewpoint. Allison's bakery was still closed, and neither her nor Frank were anywhere to be seen. I knew something was wrong. I got dressed quickly, skipped coffee, and went straight to the bakery. I tried the door. It wasn't locked, which was a big sign that something was seriously wrong. I entered quietly and looked around. No sign of anyone. Allison had a small kitchen at the back of her shop where she made tea and took her lunch breaks. I opened the door slowly and will never forget that sight. Allison was tied up and gagged. Her feet and hands were also tied together, and her eyes were wide with fear. She never made a sound, but moved her head and eyes as though trying to let me know that Frank was here too. Suddenly, I felt his presence. I turned around as he closed the door while facing us. He had a large butcher's knife in his right hand. "Old man," he said aggressively, "didn't your mom ever teach you to mind your own business?" he grunted as he began moving the knife between hands. I took the deceptive, helpless Tai Chi stance, ready to use my combat skills. "Ha ha, you're pathetic, old man," he laughed. "You look like an idiot." Allison was writhing and moaning with the gag in her mouth. Frank managed to move about 3 inches closer, and then he didn't have time to know what hit him. In a split second, the knife went flying. I busted his arm and tripped him over backwards with 1 foot behind his. It only took 15 seconds and I'd beaten him senseless. He was bleeding from mouth, eyes, and nose. Writhing and crying out in agony, I said to him, "That'll teach you not to mess with a 62-year-old paratrooper, you piece of shit." Then I kicked him in the head, and he was out for the count. I removed Allison's gag and untied her. She gasped for air, but eventually her breathing steadied. Other than a few bruises from the tight ropes, she was unharmed. "Thank you, Mr. Abbott," she said repeatedly. "Where'd you learn to fight like that?" she asked. I just smiled. "Age is just a number, my friend. Let's call the cops." The police arrived promptly, and after questioning us, they had to carry the unconscious Frank to their van. Looking at me with my short gray hair, the two policemen couldn't believe that I was the one who had reduced a man much younger than myself to an unconscious mess on the floor. I checked in on Allison regularly after that, and we became close friends. A 62-year-old and a 25-year-old. Never again would Frank be stalking her. He was charged with severe harassment and attempted murder. Despite the event being extremely traumatic for Allison, news of the incident spread quickly and gained her twice as many customers. I still sit and observe from my viewpoint. When Frank Hansen was questioned by the police, they found out that he and Allison had been at school together. He confessed at being grossly overweight as a scholar, and despite Allison having quite a few boyfriends, she always rejected his advances. He held a grudge against her for 10 years, vowing that one day he would win her over. He worked out regularly and finally got the physique he thought would impress her. When she showed no interest in him yet again and didn't even recognize him, it was a snapping point for him. Unfortunately for him, his plan of raping and murdering Allison was foiled by a 62-year-old paratrooper.